This is the August 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. And there right now in our calendar of events, you'll find a list of items in red that include the daily programs that will happen from the University of Illinois Extension tent at the Farm Progress Show. We'll be on stage at 2 o'clock noon and 10 a.m. That with daily programs that include the brokers, the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and many others from University of Illinois Extension. We're just inside the main gate and to the right by about two blocks. We'll be glad to have you. There's also a map included in those links, so you'll be able to know exactly where we're located. Come visit us at the Farm Progress Show. That's at the end of the month in Decatur on the 29th, the 30th, and the 31st. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson. He's with AgMarket.net. We're joined by Ben Coons from Ag Commodities, Inc., along with a couple of folks from the Department of ACE, Agriculture and Consumer Economics. The FarmDoc team members, they include Joanna Calusi and Nick Paulson. Thanks for being with us. Let's start with you, Ben Coons, today, because you've changed jobs since the last time I had you on. You were booking a lot of freight at one point across the planet, ocean freight, that is. You now have a different job, but still a very interesting one as it's related to agricultural commodities. Can you tell me where you work and what you do?
Yeah, so I started a little over a month ago for a company named Ag Commodities, Inc. It's a group of about five brokers focused on cash markets. So I'm currently doing soybean meal out of the Gulf and PNW on barges, vessels, and rail cars, and then also doing FOB soybean vessels out of the U.S., and then our team also does Brazilian FOB beans and CNF China beans.
I have a question about soybean meal out of the PNW off the top of my head, and then we'll get started in some of the rest of this. There is a lot of concern within the Dakotas that they'll have a great deal of bean meal once all of their new plants come on related to soy diesel, because that's an oil pressing situation. Those are now coming on, but they don't have the facilities yet to rail bean meal to the PNW. Probably needs to be built out. Have you talked about what happens to bean meal that comes out of that part of the world and whether that's something we should need to be concerned about as it's related to the whole of the soy complex?
Well, yeah, you know, with the new crush plants, obviously we're going to see a lot more soybean meal production. And as we go for the oil, we're going to have to find homes for the meal, because the meal is not the product driving the expansion. There's currently a port expansion underway in the PNW at Grays Harbor. And, you know, as far as the facility goes, all the BN plants can load unit trains. So they'll be able to load 100 car trains and do direct shots to the PNW to clear it. The UP guys will struggle a little bit more as they can only do single car shipments on the UP. But I think, you know, with everything going on, we're going to have plenty of investment to make that meal move.
I'd like to have each of you, Wayne and Ben, ask a couple of questions of the ag economist. Wayne, I think we'll start with you, and maybe you have a question for Joanna Calusi, who specializes in Brazil, Argentina, South America.
What effects does the strong El Nino have on the crops down in South America?
So that's a good question. Everybody would like to know about these possible effects. A potential is strong El Nino worries Brazilian farmers and cheers Argentinian farmers. I will explain why. Generally, El Nino can result in above average rainfall in southern Brazil and below normal rainfall in the center west, the heart of Brazil's soybean and corn production. The Brazilian National Weather Service has a red forecast above normal rainfall in southern Brazil for the August, September, October, and below average rainfall for the same period in central and northern Brazil. Dry weather in central Brazil could delay soybean planting, which could also delay the safrinha corn planting in January and February. If the soybean planting is delayed, it may or may not impact soybean yields. But if the safrinha corn planting is delayed, there is an increased risk of lower corn yields. That's the reason that the Brazilian farmers are concerned regarding a strong El Niño. This El Niño can have a very negative impact on Brazil's agriculture production. On the other hand, the presence of El Niño is good news for Argentina's agriculture sector. In the last crop season, the key agricultural areas in Argentina saw production fall by 50% compared with the previous years due to a historical drought caused by La Niña phenomenon, that inverse of El Niño. Generally, El Niño causes heavier than normal rains in Argentina. However, more significant rainfall would make it more challenging to plant soybean and corn in the next months. So a regular El Niño would be much better for Argentina agriculture than a strong El Niño.
Ben, do you have a question for Joanna?
Yeah, Joanna, what is going on with Argentina's ag economy with the smaller production numbers we're seeing?
So Argentina is fined Argentina is fighting inflation that you know of over 100% and a weak peso currency with around 4 in 10 people living in poverty. It's also locked in talks with the International Monetary Fund to renegotiate a $44 billion debt deal. Argentina, in fact, is facing a complicated situation, mainly made worse by the severe drought this year. The South American nation is the world's top exporter of processed soybean, the number 3 for corn, and one important wheat supplier. But the most recent harvest was affected by one of the country's worst droughts in the history. Argentina, that's also the third largest global soybean producer behind Brazil and the United States, saw its crop decline 43% to 25 million metric tons in 2022-23 crop season, according to data from USDA. But Argentina's Rosario Grains Exchange estimated an even smaller harvest, close to 20 million metric tons.
So following that up, I have a question that's related to the lack of production in Argentina. How many soybeans in bushels or tons have moved out of Brazil into Argentina? And I think there'll be a follow-up question related to this it relates to what they're able to service in the export market, but we'll get to that in a bit. But did a lot of beans move from Brazil to China, to Argentina?
Yes, and that's not a usual situation. This year, Argentina became the second main destination from Brazilian soybeans in the first 7 months of 2023, behind just China. Last year, just for you have one idea, in the same period, Argentina was the number 21 Brazilian soybean destination. Data from the Brazilian government shows that from January to July this year, Brazil sold $1.7 billion of soybeans to Argentina, putting the commodity at the top of the list of Brazilian products sold to its neighbor. The value of soybeans exported to Argentina this year is more than 10 times the total amount of soybeans exported to Argentina during the same period last year. The soybean account for 16% of Brazilian sales to Argentina so far this year, taking the traditional places of cars that normally is the number one for the last 20 years. So this year, the total soybean imports by Argentina should reach 90 million tons. Argentina should import about 5 million metric tons for Paraguay this year, and Brazil is still expected to export an additional 2 or 3 million tons to Argentina. Because of a harvest loss and contracts already signed for selling soybean oil and meal, Argentina used the imported grain to fulfill contracts. The future of Brazil's trade with Argentina is still uncertain, given the cloud scenario to the Argentina economy that we'll talk later about the election this year.
And I think there's one follow-up question, Wayne, to this that we probably ought to ask you, and I've discussed this a little bit.
You know, what's the trend for South America to be taking over the world market, and how much of it can they actually handle with facilities they have now, or what's the expansions that they could have?
So over the last 5 years, South America has accounted for around 4% of global soybean production and 15% of global corn production. Over the last 5 years, shares of world soybean production are about 37% for Brazil, 13% for Argentina, and 4% of the rest of the region. That includes Paraguay, Bolivia, Uruguay. Shares of world corn production are roughly 9% for Brazil, 5% for Argentina, and 1% for others. You know that Brazil is traditionally the world's largest exporter of soybeans. With surging demand from China and supply limitations for drought heat in Argentina, Brazil is expected to be the leading supplier and exporter of soybeans in this market year, 2023. Regarding corn, Brazil may surpass U.S. corn exports in the next market year, but it's very hard to say that it will be a trend. What is indeed a trend is the growth of the second corn crop in Brazil, the safrinha, planted right after the soybean harvest. In the last crop season, for example, safrinha accounted for almost 80% of total corn production in Brazil. Actually, August now is traditionally a big month for corn exports because corn from the safrinha harvest in the center west is flowing to Brazilian ports. So additional demand from China is also expected to boost Brazil's corn exports to 52 million tons compared to 44 million tons exported in 2022. China started to import Brazilian corn last November in response to the war between Russia and Ukraine, which was a major exporter of corn to China. Until August, just for you have some numbers, Brazil exported 24 million tons of corn, according to the Brazilian National Association of Grain Exporters. Brazil is expected to maintain strong corn exports for the remaining 4 months of the year. And for that, Brazil will need to average 7 million tons of corn exports for the next 4 months to reach 52 million tons and then surpass the United States.
So, Ben Coons, I'm going to ask you this question. I know you've not been in freight for about a month, but you have been booking freight around the planet and see those numbers. There's a lot of concern within the trade that the United States will not have the exports for both corn and soybeans that it has in the past. Clearly, that's been the case for this year. The hope is that that might pick up for the coming year, given what you've heard about and what we know about the Brazilian crop and their size, how worried should producers be that the export market is not open to them at this point, as it has been in the past?
Well, I think you've got a lot of factors going on. One, you have the incredible crop that they had in Brazil with the beans and the corn this year. You've also got a freight advantage out of Brazil to a lot of places in Asia where a lot of these products are going. So by default, they're going to be a little bit cheaper at the origin and cheaper at destination because it costs less to get them there. What we're seeing today is that the market is very hand to mouth. A lot of that's being driven by just price volatility in the premiums, and also interest rates are having a big impact on grain companies and feed importers. So, you know, you have demand that is probably smaller year on year due to the inflation we're seeing around the world. And at the same time, you have higher interest rates to bear. So when someone's looking to buy in a vessel of soybeans or corn, you know, their cost of doing that just from an interest perspective is going to be a lot more. So how far out they'll go, how much they'll buy at a given time is going to be different than the low interest rate environment we've become accustomed to. Somehow it seems that Brazil continues to hang in and be competitive with us. And it's stealing, you know, demand. We're seeing September beans trading into China, which we didn't think Brazil was going to have September beans. So it's like, oh boy, you know, and I think, yeah, I think certainly farmers need to be prepared and probably expect that as we move forward throughout the crop year and the USDA changes their balance sheets, that export number, you know, I think the path of least resistance for it is certainly down.
By how far?
I'm a broker, not a trader, for a reason, Todd. But no, I mean, you know, I think at this point it's hard to say. I mean, overall, I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there smarter than me as far as how to assess that, but it certainly doesn't feel very good.
What do the crops look like in your area? And you're in that Assumption area, if I remember correctly, Sullivan area. Near Springfield, center of the state. Crops normally look really good in that part of the world. What do they look like today?
Oh, overall, they look great. I think especially for what they've been through this year with the heat in June there, and we've had good rains here over the last 6 weeks. Really turned the corner in July. As we were talking before we started, I think, you know, from what we see from a plant health perspective early on, it looked like the earlier planted stuff was ahead of it, but I think that the later planted stuff's caught up, and we'll see. I've done a little bit of walk in fields, and I think we're going to be every bit as good as last year, if not a little bit better. So I think we'll be above average on the corn and beans. I'm not very good at guessing beans, but you know, they are potted pretty heavy and look pretty healthy. So we're expecting pretty good crops in our corner of the world.
And near Crawfordsville, Indiana, you've been telling me the crops have been good for a long time. Do they remain that way?
They sure do, Todd. I'll tell you what, we've been blessed with rains when other people weren't getting rains, and we've continued to get rains, sometimes a little extra than what we'd like, but a lot better to have a little extra than none at all in what's going on. There was talk of maybe some white mold and some beans north of Crawfordsville this week. We haven't went out and scouted much or looked for that, and I don't know how heavy it is, but there was at least two farmers north of town that did say that. But all in all, we had some... The wheat beans that went in, I mean, after those couple rains come along, I mean, they're surging on, and I think they're going to be 25, 30 bushel, or if not more, just like that and how they're looking. And if the second crop, double crop beans are going to be that good, what are the original crop ones going to be?
So for the corn, I think farmers will be surprised at this point because most of them thought that this was such a difficult season precipitation-wise, that the crop is in as good a shape as it is. I made a trip for about 75 miles, stopping 5 miles on every 5 miles on Wednesday of this week. If I had to guess, and I'm not really guessing, I'm guessing on the APH, but not on what the yields that I was looking at were, this crop appears to be an APH yield crop across those areas, or better, potentially. I wonder what farmers should think about as it relates to that size crop. And then I want to put it into the context of some FarmDoc numbers that relate to the FSA figures that have been released. We'll get more to that in just a bit, but those numbers add a lot of acres to both corn and soybeans.
They sure do, Todd, and that's scary. Scary is a good word for that one. But I will tell you one other thing, and we want to look at this and think about it. If you think you're going to have these bigger yields and you don't have room on the farm to store it, what's the interest rates done this year? They're up, up, up. And that means holding corn every month is going to cost you interest money, that if you have a note and you didn't pay all your bills up front and you owe farm credit or the bank some money. So you have to look and say, hey, I've got to gain 3 to 4 cents a month on home stored corn, and even more if it's in the elevator along the way. So do we want to be making some early sales here to get some of that corn that we don't have room for out of here before we get in the glut and everybody else is going to the elevator?
Hard to do when corn's $4.60 cash.
Yeah, but it can go cheaper.
Let's talk a little bit to Nick Paulson as well. He's an agricultural economist with the FarmDoc team. I know, Nick, that you did not put the supply and demand tables together that were released on the FarmDoc website, but I'm guessing that you've looked at them and thought about them a little bit. It shows acreage for corn up, well, about 2 million acres, so above 95 million. I want to say 95.6, but I don't remember it off the top of my head. Another 500,000 acres for soybeans nationwide. That would put it at 84 million acres. Total was up, when you add them together, around 98 million total. That's a lot of acres of corn and soybeans. It's usually 90. I don't know whether we can actually put that many in the ground or not. Still, those numbers are there and the interest rates are high. When you think about this all together, what does it mean for you related to how farmers should be considering their budgets?
Wow, that's about 15 questions rolled into one there, Todd. Well, speaking of budgets for 2024, we will be releasing at least the first version of those in the next couple weeks. Gary Schnicke will be heading up that process, and so we'll have kind of our first look at 2024. You know, I think there's a couple things to consider on kind of maybe those surprisingly big acreage numbers. If that's how you're viewing those, we've come off two, you know, fantastic income years. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Obviously, farmers could be making some adjustments to those things with some of the lower commodity prices that we've seen. But we're also seeing easing off on some of the input cost side of things, too, that is going to, again, I think, encourage, you know, maybe some bigger acreage numbers. We've seen fertilizer prices drop quite a bit. And that was probably the biggest concern we heard from farmers. You know, when corn was higher, that was kind of the complaint we were hearing, was that input costs and fertilizers in particular were very high.
If you had to pick one thing for farmers to need to control cost on in the coming year, what is it?
Well, you know, I'll bring up fertilizers again. I think even despite some of the declines that we've seen in fertilizer prices, some of the latest numbers in terms of averages in Illinois, we're looking at, you know, anhydrous, for example, maybe even being half of what we were looking at last year at this time going into 2023. That's still an area where I think there's a lot of opportunity for cost control. Even with lower prices, you can make some adjustments on the type of product you're applying. For example, right now we're seeing urea being priced very competitively relative to anhydrous or liquid options compared to what we've seen historically. You know, we always talk about farmers can probably make some rate reductions. Maybe that's not a good long-term strategy, but we tend to see that most farmers are probably applying more than they necessarily need to. If we're basing recommendations off of some of the university research that's out there for the Midwest.
Probably important for farmers to visit the InRate calculator online. It will give you a good calculation for what your nitrogen rates will be for next year, for this year as well, for that matter. You can find that by searching InRate calculator. You will end up at an Iowa State University Extension website, though there are numbers from Illinois there and all of the Midwestern states. Again, just search InRate calculator and it'll let you adjust a series of things, including the price of anhydrous, so that you can come up with an optimum rate. And it normally will be much lower than probably you are already applying. Let's continue on with this conversation related to what farmers can, maybe should do about this year. Farmers, clearly, Ben Coons, are behind in their marketing. Without a doubt, every place that we talk to, as it's related to the elevator system, suggests that farmers are behind probably 15 to 20%, maybe as much as 30% on their marketing for the year. And now they're facing some real peril as it's related to their total income, I believe. Are there things that they can do, should do, think about to manage the risk that is getting larger by the day?
Well, yeah, Todd, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think one of the things is, you know, is know your budgets, know your cost of production, and kind of use that as a baseline for making decisions. I mean, you know, back of the napkin math would tell you that you're profitable on soybeans and maybe it's going to be a challenge on corn depending on what your yields are going to be. So, you know, I think guys need to go where the money is, you know, for lack of a better term. You know, if they're profitable on beans, probably ought to move those first, especially when we're talking about the interest rates involved, right? Get that cash flow coming and get that off the books. Then you can see what to do with the corn and maybe get some chances to sell some better corn down the road once we get into the South American planting season and we get some of those seasonal rallies coming.
I'll follow up with you on this same question, Wayne, but make a comment in the same process, which is we have been talking about marketing corn, marketing old crop, marketing new crop for well, since last fall, probably. And finally, folks are saying, wait, that time has passed now. It's time to actually lock in some profit, and your best option is soybeans. What are you and the ag market team discussing?
Well, I think, Todd, along the way, there were some more sales made last week by the ag market team and the JSA group. We are looking at the idea that we do want to be marketed. You know, they're looking at a lot of things. Number one, how much storage do you have and where do you want to market it and what price? But we also, as we talked about before, you want to look, you might not want to put as many months out the road, depending on whether you have a loan at the bank or not, because that interest rate is going to add up a lot faster this year. I think we're even marketing some of the 24 crop. We marketed some of that here over the last 2 weeks again also. We noticed that three out of the four advisory firms besides Ag Market that we sort of pay attention to have all marketed either corn, beans, or corn and wheat over the last week and a half. So there's been an awful lot of the professionals marketing some of this crop. We have a very, very, very poor lineup of export business. The river, it's going to go from 5 over down in Memphis to 5 under as far as the water. They're not going to be able to load barges. Their basis level is probably 40 cents less because they figure they're going to be able to have to load barges at 80%. So, but their basis is going to be 40 cents less for our harvest beans right now. You know, we're not seeing the business on the river. We are seeing bean business at the processing plants. But the river is not the hot spot for marketing this year because of the water and not business at the Gulf.
One of the things that farmers sometimes take advantage of but don't always remember, Nick, is that crop insurance gives them maybe some more fortitude in order to make forward sales without really knowing whether they have the crop. If they go into their fields, they probably know they have the crop today, but they're asking the question now, will crop insurance pay? How do we figure that out? Are there tools that we can use that can help us find some answers to that and make some decisions related to what we're going to market at this point?
Yeah, I mean, if we take a look at where December corn and November beans are at today, we are in the territory, definitely on the corn side, where we would be triggering payments on some of the supplemental plans like SCO and ECO. If yields are, you know, at or definitely below trend yields, although what everything has been talked about earlier in our conversation suggests that yields may be above that. So that could offset some of those price losses. On the bean side, we're not really at a price point currently where we'd be in the neighborhood of triggering payments, unless there's also yield losses to go along with that. But, you know, we've still got, you know, month and a half till we get into the price discovery period for the harvest price. So that's just basing it off of where we're at today. And again, a lot of uncertainty left on both the price and the yield side for the crop that's out there. FarmDoc provides a number of tools. You can go in, plug in numbers, do some scenario analysis with the crop insurance evaluator, and things like that. So you can, you know, if you got a decent idea of where you think your yield's at or where you think your county is going to be at on some of those supplemental area coverage plans, you can do some scenario analysis. But again, I think there's a lot could still happen over the next 6 weeks that's going to change that.
We'll get a final word from each of you, but we'll remind our listeners that next week, Chip Flory and Company will be out on the annual crop tour. We'll follow that very closely on the Closing Market Report each and every day. You can find it at willag.org, willag.org, and we will have those final numbers for you on Friday afternoon. They're released just about the time that we go on the air, but I'll have them for you during that program. So we'll get that set of numbers. Also, just a reminder that what you see from the tour and the final numbers that you see on Friday are different. One is the pro farmer number. That's the final number Friday and what their total national yield expectations are. The tour numbers are just the tour numbers and they're incorporated into that last set of figures. But you'll find those on our website and daily updates, and they'll be there at willag.org. Let's get a final word from each of you now. We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of agmarket.net.
I think we've got a lot of decisions to make over the next month here as we look at this market. We might, you know, look where the yields we've seen so far have been very good, but they've been in very good areas where most of these tests have been taken. The Springfield area that Todd talked about down around Taylorville, those are areas that are good 9 out of 9 years. I mean, not 9 out of 10, but 9 out of 9. And there's going to be some areas or not. There was another firm, Dan Bossi, went out on a 3-day tour between Iowa and Illinois. He says smaller kernels, shorter kernel depth, and not as many pods. I think the Pro Farmer Tour next week is going to tell us an awful lot, but I'm awfully scared that our export business is lacking a whole bunch right now. And I think that the basis levels are going to be wider because of interest rates, because of the idea that they think the farmers are going to have to move some at harvest because there's going to be so many bushels to go and they don't have storage for all of it.
Ben Coons of Ag Commodities, Inc., your final word?
I think just echo a lot of what Wayne has said. You know, we've got to keep an eye on exports, right? And as we get a feel for what this balance sheet's going to ultimately end up like. And, you know, with as we discussed, the farmers are well behind normal selling pace, which creates more harvests to move at, more bushels to move at harvest, excuse me. Which, you know, that in turn is not a bullish input for basis. So I think guys need to be watching the local basis and be in front of it this year to manage that basis risk because it may be bigger than we've had in some of the recent years.
Joanna Colucci from the Farm Doc team, University of Illinois.
Yeah, I'd like to highlight two factors regarding one, Brazil and Argentina. Brazilian farmers will start planting their 23-24 soybean crop around mid-September in the central west states, including Mato Grosso. The planting season will start in October in the south of Brazil. By the way, El Niño can help producers in Rio Grande do Sul to recover from drought-related losses in the last crop season. All forecasts about the next Brazilian crop season are still very incipient, as we are only talking about planting intentions. But if you look at the global scenario, we will have some indications. And regarding Argentina, farmers in Argentina are anxious for economy policy changes to boost trade. The October presidential election will be a key for policy affecting Argentina's huge farm sector. Javier Milei, the right-wing presidential candidate, took a surprise last Sunday, taking the first place in the primary. After the result, the currency devaluation fell a lot in Argentina. On August 15, Argentinian government announced the suspension of meat exports for 2 weeks. So in summary, farmer leaders have traditionally supported market-friendly candidates in Brazil and Argentina and U.S. as well. And I would say if farmers could ask the new president for something, they would ask two things: unify the exchange rate and eliminate the retenciones, the export taxes in Argentina. Both policies are among Milei promises if elect president in October. So let's see what the elections will bring to Argentinians.
And if I remember correctly, one of his promises was to tie the economy to the U.S. dollar in some form. So it'll be interesting to watch and see how that plays out when we get to the October presidential election for Argentina. We'll wrap up with you, Nick Paulson, your final word for the day.
Yeah, I mean, I would reiterate a lot of what Wayne and Ben said. They're more the experts on marketing for sure. Probably boring advice as an economist. We tend to harp on this a lot, but know your budgets, as Ben said, know your cost of production, and I think don't get lulled into the the experience of the past 2 years. Again, record income years. Take advantage of maybe some of these lower fertilizer prices that we've seen. We're at year plus long decline on that. And so if you can identify some opportunities to price some things for 2024, both on the input side and maybe even on the 2024 crop, it's never a bad decision to lock in a gain, even if it's maybe not as much as you've seen in the last 2 years.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They include Nick Paulson, Wayne Nelson, Ben Coons, and Joanna Colucci. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.